sector just north of the school, Sector F7, which would be forbidden at 1 a.m., he heard a gunshot and then that familiar machine gun burst. Because he was on the mountain looking over the flat area, Hiroki saw a repeated flash, what seemed like a muzzle spitting flame into the farm immediately west of the residential area. As he descended the slope, he heard an ear-shattering explosion. The night sky above the trees lit up. Then he heard the rattling sound again. As he left the foot of the mountain, he saw a building on fire where the light had been flashing. Hiroki thought the assailant with the machine gun might still be there, but as he'd done with Megumi Ito, he had to find out what happened. He cautiously wove his way across the farm, approaching the area where he found the body of Shinji Mamura. The area was flickering with flames. The warehouse building, that must have been what exploded, was blown apart. Large and small debris were scattered all over what appeared to be a parking lot. Shinji was lying face down in front of a station wagon in the lot. His body was riddled with bullets. Later, Hiroki found the bodies of Yutaka Sito and Keita Iijima in the debris. There was no trace of the assailant with the machine gun, but Hiroki thought it was likely someone who was playing the game would show up soon, so he quickly left the area. It was only after he'd crossed the island's latitudinal road and entered the foothills of the southern mountain that he thought about Shinji, thought about the death of the Shinji Mamura. There was something unbelievable about it since Hiroki knew him pretty well. It sounded offensive now, but he'd always thought Shinji was immortal. Hiroki went to the local martial arts school and learned to fight, but in the end, that was just a matter of technique. It was nothing against Shinji's innate athletic prowess. Even if they'd fought according to martial arts rules, and even though Hiroki was 10 centimeters taller, Shinji would have easily defeated him. Besides, Shinji was much smarter. Even if Shinji couldn't escape the game, although it was likely he'd considered it, Hiroki firmly believed no one else would be able to kill Shinji. And yet the machine gun shooter somehow managed to do just that. He couldn't afford to mourn over Shinji, though. What mattered now was finding Kayoko Kotohiki. He had to find her soon. If the machine gun shooter found her, someone like Kotohiki would be killed instantly. Since Sector G3, forbidden at 3 a.m., was on the northern side of the southern mountain peak, Hiroki decided to head over there. He'd already walked this mountain several times. Takako Chikuza's body was still lying in Sector H4. In the region right before Sector G3. He couldn't even bury her. He'd only managed to close her eyes and cross her arms over her chest. Her body was still outside the forbidden zone. As he cautiously moved forward through the darkness, Hiroki thought, "I'm so awful." He wasn't even able to stay by his closest childhood friend. He'd probably be walking by her as he headed toward Sector G3. "I'm so sorry, Takako. I still need to take care of something. Right now I just have to see Kayoko Kotohiki. Please forgive me." Then something else occurred to him. It concerned Yutaka Sito. Yutaka's seating number immediately followed his, so Yutaka had exited right before Hiroki. But Hiroki had still been in the middle of checking out the premises, frantically searching for a hiding place that gave him a clear look at the school exit. So Yutaka was gone by the time he could afford to look back. Hiroki decided Takako would be his priority, and so he let Haruka Tanizawa, female student number 12, and Yuichiro Takeguchi, male student number 13, pass by. But despite his extreme caution, Yoshio Akamatsu's surprise appearance had made him panic enough to lose Takako. Yutaka had managed to join up with his friends Shinji Mamura and Keita Iijima, but Yutaka was now dead along with Shinji. "I have to hurry," he thought. "I can't let Kotohiki die." He stopped by a bare tree and checked the radar in his left hand again. With the moon providing the only source of light, the unlit liquid crystal display was difficult to read, but by squinting his eyes, he found he could make out faint traces of the crystal particles. Nothing changed on the screen, though. The only star mark was the one indicating his own position. Hiroki sighed. Maybe he should just shout for Kotohiki Hiroki had considered doing this several times, but then decided against it. When he found Takako, it had been too late. He didn't want that to happen again. No, it wouldn't work. He couldn't. First of all, Kotohiki wouldn't necessarily respond to his call. In fact, she might run away. Furthermore, although he didn't care about someone coming after him once he called for her, if Kotohiki were to come at the same time, she might end up getting attacked. In the end, he could only rely on the government-supplied radar. And without this equipment, he would have been even worse off. He absolutely despised the government for throwing them into this stupid game, but he had to admit he benefited from his equipment. What was this called? A stroke of luck in hard times? Or more likely, a light in a tunnel of fury? He went up and down a low cliff covered in bushes and came out onto a gentle slope scattered with trees. He knew he was entering Sector H4, where Takako was resting in peace. Hiroki raised the radar, moving it slightly to catch the moonlight on the crystal display. He saw a blurred, double image of the star mark indicating his position at the center of the display. Oh no, I'm getting tired. Even my vision's going now. Hiroki was still looking down when he realized he was wrong. At the same time, he turned around and swung his stick in his right hand. Following the martial arts technique he had learned so thoroughly, his elegant swing traced a graceful arc. The stick impressively smacked the arm of the figure standing behind him. The person groaned and dropped the gun that had been leveled at Hiroki. Someone had snuck up behind him when his guard was down for that brief moment. The figure made a dash for the gun on the ground. Hiroki thrust the stick out in front of him. The figure froze and then staggered back. Hiroki saw it. First, it was only the sailor suit. Then the beautiful face, brightly lit by the moon. Angelic. It was unmistakably hers. It was right after he left the school, when he still hadn't managed to find a hiding place. Hiroki had been lurking in the corner of the athletic field when he saw the face of Mitsuko Sauma, female student number 11, as she emerged from the school building after him. Mitsuko lifted both of her hands and stepped back. "Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me," she shouted. She staggered and fell on her behind, revealing her white legs up beyond the thighs of her pleated skirt. She continued coquettishly to move back in the pale blue moonlight. "Please, I was just trying to talk to you. I wouldn't think of killing anyone. Please help me. Help me." Hiroki looked down at her without saying a word. Maybe she'd taken his silence to be a sign he meant no harm. Mitsuko slowly lowered her hands. Her eyes had the intimidated look of a terrified mouse, and tears were gleaming in them. "You believe me, don't you?" she said. A ray of moonlight fell on her tear-stained face. Her eyes were faintly smiling. Of course, it wasn't the proud, victorious smile of deception, but a smile brimming with relief that she felt deep in her heart. I, she said, but then pulled on her skirt with her left hand as if she'd finally realized her thighs were exposed. "I thought I could trust you. I've been so scared, all alone. This is so awful, I'm just so terrified." Without saying a word, Hiroki picked up the gun Mitsuko had dropped. He saw it was cocked, so he uncocked the hammer with one hand and walked over to Mitsuko. He offered her the handle of the gun.
Thank you.
Mitsuko reached out, but the gun froze. Hiroki flipped it around with his hand. Now the muzzle was pointed right between her brows.
"Well, what are you doing, Hiroki?"
Mitsuko's face was twisted with dismay and horror. At the very least, it looked contorted. She was priceless. It wouldn't matter how many sordid rumors you heard about Mitsuko Sauma. Most people, particularly guys, would have to believe her once this angelic face of hers pleaded for mercy. No, even if you didn't believe her, you'd still end up doing anything you could for her. By no means was Hiroki an exception. Still, these were special circumstances. "Forget it, Mitsuko," Hiroki said. He held the gun and stood upright. "I saw Takako right before she died." "Oh, She looked up at him, her perfectly shaped eyes trembling. Even if inside she was regretting not having finished Takako off, she gave no indication whatsoever of any regret. She just maintained that terrified look, a look seeking understanding and protection.
No, that was an accident. Sure, I saw some of the others, but when I encountered Takako, it was her. She tried to kill me. That gun's really Takako's, so I...
Hiroki recocked the Colt 45 with a click. Mitsuko's eyes squinted. I know Takako. Takako would never try to kill someone, nor would she ever panic and go on a shooting spree. Not even in this stupid game, Hiroki said. Mitsuko tucked in her chin. She looked up at Hiroki and formed a smile. While it sent chills down his spine, it was at this moment that Mitsuko looked even more beautiful.
Huh,
she faintly laughed. I thought she died instantly, she said. Hiroki didn't respond and kept pointing the gun at her. Still sitting, Mitsuko pinched the edge of her skirt with her left thumb and index finger, pulling it back slowly, once again revealing those enticing legs. Hiroki looked up. How about it? If you help me, you can do what you like with me. I'm not bad, you know. Hiroki remained frozen, holding the gun. He examined her face. I guess not, Mitsuko said. She said lightly, Of course not. I mean, I'd kill you the moment you let down your guard. Besides, how could you sleep with the girl who killed your girlfriend? She's not my girlfriend. Mitsuko looked at Hiroki. But she was my best friend. Oh, really? Mitsuko raised her brow. Then she asked, Why won't you shoot me then? Is it because you're some kind of feminist? Can't shoot women? Her supremely confident face was still beautiful. It was totally different from Takako's, who had the graceful beauty of a war goddess in Greek or Roman myth. Here we had a teenage Yuki Onna. She's charming, innocent, angelic, yet completely cold. Under the moonlight, her eyes were like gleaming ice. Hiroki felt dizzy. How? He could tell his voice was hoarse. How could you kill someone so easily? You fool, Mitsuko said. She sounded as if she could care less about the gun pointed at her forehead. Those are the rules. Hiroki squinted and shook his head. Not everyone's playing by them. Mitsuko tilted her head again. Then she said, still smiling warmly, Hiroki. It sounded so plain and friendly, the way a girl who ended up sitting next to her crush would call him, looking for some way to start a conversation before homeroom began. You're probably a good person, Hiroki, she said. Hiroki didn't understand and knit his brows. His mouth might have been open. Mitsuko continued, lightly, as if she were singing. Good people are good, in some respects, but even those good people can turn bad. Or maybe they end up being good their entire lives. Maybe you're one of those people. Mitsuko looked away from Hiroki and then shook her head. No, that's beside the point. I just decided to take instead of being taken. It's not a question of good or bad. Wrong or right. It's just what I want to do. Hiroki's lips trembled. They were twitching uncontrollably. Why, though? Mitsuko smiled again. I don't know. But if I have to come up with some explanation... Well, for starters... She looked into Hiroki's eyes and then said, I was raped when I was 9 years old. 3 guys taking turns, 3 times each. Oh, wait. One of them might have done it 4 times. One of you did it. Although they were middle-aged men, I was just a skinny kid back then, she said. My chest was flat and my legs were like sticks, but that's what they wanted. And when I started screaming, that only excited them more. So even now when I'm with perverted men like that, I still pretend to cry. Hiroki stood frozen as he stared at Mitsuko,
who just revealed so much but continued wearing her pleasant smile. He was shocked by this devastating story. It was, Hiroki might have been on the verge of saying something, but before he could, a silver light flashed out of Mitsuko's hands. Hiroki realized Mitsuko had managed to reach behind her back with her right hand, but by then the double-bladed diver's knife, this used to be Megumi Ito's weapon, was already planted in his right shoulder. Hiroki let out a groan, and although he still held the gun, he staggered back in pain. Mitsuko instantly got up and ran past Hiroki into the woods behind him. Hiroki quickly looked back and caught a glimpse of her as she vanished into the dark. He knew if he didn't kill Mitsuko Saoma now, then Kayoko Kotohiki might be the next to fall into her trap. But Hiroki couldn't bring himself to do it. Instead, he pressed his left hand against the right shoulder where the blood from the knife wound began to soak through his school coat. He stared into the dark where Mitsuko had disappeared. Of course, Mitsuko might have made up the story to stall him, but Hiroki couldn't buy that. Mitsuko told him the truth, and he'd only heard part of it. Hiroki had been puzzled over how a third-year junior high school girl his age could be so merciless. It turned out she had acquired the psyche of a grown adult a long time ago. A twisted adult's... No. It was more accurate to say a twisted child's psyche. The blood oozed down his sleeve to the Colt 45, and then began dripping from the tip of the gun in a thin line, landing on a pile of moldy leaves by his feet without a sound. 17 students remaining. Chapter 54. Slightly past 3:30 a.m., Toshinori Oda, male student number 4, left the house he was hiding in. Immediately after he first entered, he surmised it was inside Sector E4. Sakamochi had announced the sector would be forbidden as of 5 a.m. Before he opened the back door to leave, he glanced over at Hirono Shimizu's body, which he dragged into the corner. All he did was look at the body lying face down. He didn't feel particularly sorry for her. After all, this was a serious competition. You get what you deserve. Hirono Shimizu hadn't even thought twice about shooting him the moment she saw him. Of course, he'd been the one who snuck up behind Hirono to choke her. Although he wasn't sure where his next resting spot would be, Toshinori finally decided to move east toward the residential area. The area on the map was approximately 200 square meters. According to the map, the narrow flatland extending outward from the residential area turned into farm fields spotted with houses. Once he was well beyond this zone, then all he had to do was hide in one of these houses. After all, he came from a privileged family and lived in what was probably the nicest house in the prefecture. Kazuo Kiriyama's house was actually the nicest, but Toshinori would never admit this. Hiding in bushes was beneath him. Entering a house was dangerous, given how someone might already be hiding there. But he wasn't worried. Now he not only had a bulletproof vest, which came with a certificate attesting to its high quality, but also the revolver he'd taken from Hirono. Furthermore, he was now wearing a full-face motorcycle helmet he'd found inside the house. A thin cloud appeared in the sky. Its tip was already slowly beginning to cross the low full moon. After checking the chin guard of his super deluxe helmet, he crossed the yard and made his way down the edge of the narrow field next to it. He could see the area continuing down to the eastern shore. It wasn't completely flat, though. It was slightly hilly, like small rolling waves. Most of the area was covered with farms visible in the moonlight. On the left, 100 meters away, was a house by the base of the northern mountain. There was another house another 100 meters to its right. Further left were two more houses. Those were the closest. 300 to 400 meters away were farms spotted with houses. He couldn't see very well because his view was blocked by a hill and the woods, but this geography seemed to continue out to the residential area on the island's east side. The flames from the intense explosion that came immediately after Sakamochi's midnight announcement were located immediately to the right of the hill. But the fire must have gone out, because now the area had sunk back into darkness. On the south side, to Toshinori's right, stood two adjacent houses, but this was, if you assumed the blue dots on the map indicated residential houses, on the borderline between sectors E4 and F4. Behind him, the northern and southern mountains were connected, or to be more accurate, the base of the northern mountain stretched out like a cliff along the western shore without any houses in sight. According to the map, though, there were supposed to be a couple houses up on the mountain. Unless he'd misread the map, he'd be outside the forbidden zone when he got to the third or fourth house to the east. But if he found out they were dumps, then he might have to consider moving further on. First of all, he couldn't stand dirty houses, and second of all, he was certain a vulgar place would only attract vulgar people. Toshinori crouched down and walked cautiously along the field ridge of the farm. He was appalled at the sensation of dirty soil, and the dull pain he felt from Hirono Shimizu's shot in the stomach area of his bulletproof vest only infuriated him more. Why did he have to be thrown into this coarse game and writhe around on the ground with what he could only think of as the vulgar masses? This was an expression his father, who ran the largest food company in the eastern part of the prefecture, often used at home. But it was a favorite phrase Toshinori himself used to express his scorn for nearly everyone he encountered. Of course, he was well-bred, so he could never say it out loud. Whether he had a right to claim to it or not, it was true that Toshinori possessed a unique gift. Unique, even among his talented classmates who ranged from star members of their teams and clubs to leading delinquents. There was even that queer guy who was dead now. He was a very vulgar queer, too. In fact, it was unique to the entire school. He'd started private violin lessons when he was 4 years old, and now he was one of the leading junior high school players in the entire prefecture. Toshinori wasn't a genius, but he wasn't mediocre either. Arrangements were made for him to enter a highly distinguished high school in Tokyo that had its own music department. As for his future career, he thought he'd, at the very least, become the prefectural government symphony conductor. This gave him, so he believed, all the more reason not to die. He would attain the status of conductor, marry a beautiful, refined woman, and mingle with rich, elegant people. His older brother, Tadanori, was going to inherit the company. Of course, the thought of making a lot of money as president was attractive, but Toshinori thought, I don't need to deal with food products. Yuck. I'll let my vulgar brother deal with that. He was different from his loser classmates. Their deaths wouldn't mean a thing, but he was gifted. He was precious. And even in biological terms, the superior examples of a species was destined to survive, right? At first, he only had this bulletproof vest, oddly supplied as a weapon, so all he could do was sneak away and hide. But now he had a gun. He was going to be merciless. What was that about the noble soul of a music lover? Totally naive. It was true that Toshinori was only 15, and he hadn't seen much of the world, but he knew what the music world was like. For those who weren't geniuses, it was all about money and connections. It was all about crushing other competitors to survive. Whether this was objectively true or not, this was what Toshinori Oda believed. Of course, he had no close friends in third year class B, filled as it was with the vulgar masses. In fact, he despised his vulgar classmates, especially Shuya Nanahara. Toshinori did not take part in the Shio Iwa Junior High Music Club, which was filled with vulgar masses who were especially vulgar. All those losers played was popular music. Apparently, the club office was cluttered with music sheets of illegal foreign music, especially Shuya Nanahara. Toshinori was vastly superior to him in terms of music ability, given his ear training and understanding of music theory. And yet, in spite of that, the vulgar bitches in his class would scream out indecently at the sound of Shuya Nanahara plucking out kindergarten-level chords on his guitar. I mean, come on. Those bitches who listened to Shuya Nanahara playing during the short break before music class might as well have printed on their foreheads in thick Gothic font, Oh, Shuya, do me now, right here.
In contrast, they'd only politely applaud when Toshinori finished playing an elegant passage from an opera at the music teacher's request. For one thing, those loser bitches could never appreciate classical music, and for another, it was only because Shuya Nanahara was good-looking. Though Toshinori would never admit it, deep down inside he couldn't stand his own ugly face. Fine. That's what women are like anyway. They're just a different species. Just a tool to produce children. And of course to provide pleasure for men when they need it. And if they were good-looking, then they were just ornaments to place beside successful men. Yes, it all came down to money and connections. And my talent is worth the investment of money and connections. Therefore, I deserve to be the survivor. He heard gunfire at times throughout the night, and there was that amazing explosion to top it all off. But now the island was immersed in darkness and silence. Toshinori quickly circled the first house, passed it, and approached the second one. He could tell it was pretty old, even though he could only make out its silhouette. The house was surrounded by a ring of trees, and in front of the house on its west side was an extremely large broadleaf tree, its branches spread out. Its circumference was 4 to 5 meters, and it was 7 to 8 meters tall. There shouldn't be anyone here. Toshinori gripped his gun and slowly moved forward, cautiously checking the house as well as the tree. Of course, he didn't forget to stop and look in all directions. He never knew where the vulgar masses might show up, just like cockroaches. After spending a full 5 minutes checking the premises around the house, he looked back over his shoulder at the house. There were no suspicious movements that he could see through the open face of his motorcycle helmet. All right. He could see the third house, the one he wanted, nearby. Toshinori turned around one more time. He thought something round and black stirred near the ground between the trees surrounding the house. It was someone's head, he realized, but by then he was aiming his gun at it. But this one was wandering in an area that would soon become a forbidden zone. Who could it possibly be? It didn't matter. He pulled the trigger. Holding the Smith & Wesson Military & Police's wooden grip, he felt a sudden jerk in the palm of his hand. The gun popped with an orange flash, sending a sting down Toshinori's spine. Although he despised the ignorant, vulgar masses, he had a hobby that wasn't so refined. Much less refined than playing the violin. He had a model gun collection. His father owned several hunting rifles, but Toshinori was never allowed to handle them. So this was the first time he'd ever pulled the trigger of a real gun. It was real. Damn, I'm shooting a real gun. Toshinori shot twice, and his opponent collapsed into a heap, seemingly unable to move. The person didn't shoot back either. Of course not. If he had a gun, he would have shot me from behind. That's why I was able to pull the trigger in the first place. Toshinori slowly approached the figure. It shouted, "Stop!" He could tell from the voice it was Hiroki Sugimura, male student number 11, that tall guy who practiced that vulgar karate. Toshinori, by the way, hated tall guys too. He was only 162 centimeters tall, and after Yutaka Sito, the shortest guy in class. He couldn't stand A, good-looking guys, B, tall guys, and C, all-around vulgar guys. He was supposedly going out with Takako Jigusa, who tastelessly dyed her hair and wore all that gaudy jewelry. Oh, yes. She was also dead now. She wasn't bad-looking, though. Hiroki continued, "I'm not playing this game. I'm not fighting. Who are you? Yuichiro?" Hiroki had guessed it was Yuichiro Takeguchi, male student number 13, who was the next shortest guy after Toshinori. Yes, since Hiroshi Kurenaga had died a while ago, the only ones left alive who were Toshinori's height were Yuichiro and Yutaka. In any case, Toshinori wondered for a moment, what's this about not fighting? Impossible. Not playing this game would be tantamount to committing suicide. Is he trying to fool me? Even if he were, as long as he doesn't have a gun,
Toshinori changed his course of action. He lowered his gun. With his left hand, he pulled down on the chin guard of his helmet and said, "It's Toshinori." Then he thought, "Oh, I should probably stutter a little. Sorry I did that. Are you hurt?" Hiroki Sugimura slowly got up, revealing his large frame. Like Toshinori, he had his day pack on his right shoulder. His right hand held a stick, and the right sleeve of his school coat was missing. Maybe it was torn, or maybe he'd ripped it off himself. His shirt was missing underneath, and his right arm was bare. A white cloth was wrapped around the shoulder. With his bare right arm holding the stick, he resembled a naked primitive tribesman from a vulgar naked tribe. "I'm all right." Then he asked, looking at Toshinori's head, "Is that a helmet?" Yes. As he answered, Toshinori came forward, stepping onto the farm soil. "All right, three more steps." I've been so scared." Before he finished saying, "scared," Toshinori raised his right hand. 5 meters away, he couldn't miss. Hiroki's eyes opened wide. Too late, you vulgar karate bastard. You're going to die a vulgar death and end up in a vulgar grave, and I'll offer you the most vulgar flowers I can find." But Hiroki wasn't there at the end of the muzzle when the Smith & Wesson fired. A split second before the shot, Hiroki had unexpectedly ducked to his left, Toshinori's right. Toshinori, of course, had no idea Hiroki had used a martial arts move. Hiroki was incredibly fast. From this crouched position, Hiroki held up, instead of the stick in his left hand, a gun. Toshinori also had no way of knowing that although he had fixed it, in contrast to Shinji Mamura, Hiroki was in fact left-handed. So he already had a gun? Then why didn't the fool use it in the first place? This thought barely crossed Toshinori's mind when a small flame lit the night. The gun was suddenly gone from his right hand. The next moment he felt a searing pain where his right ring finger used to be. Toshinori shrieked. He fell on both his knees and held the painful stump with his left hand, and realized his ring finger was gone. Blood spurted out. He might have been wearing a bulletproof vest and a helmet, but his fingers were unprotected. "Ah, bastard! My finger! My right finger that elegantly guides the violin bow is... This can't be! In the movies, fingers never get blown away in gunfights." Hiroki approached him, gun in hand. Toshinori held his right hand and gazed at it, his eyes terrified and delirious inside his helmet. His face was getting clammy from the sweat breaking out under his helmet. Hiroki said, "So you're totally up for this. I didn't want to shoot, but I have no choice. I have to." Toshinori had no idea what Hiroki meant, and though he was in terrible pain, he still felt confident. The gun was pointed at his chest. Of course it would be. He wore the helmet not so much because it was bulletproof, but because it would force his enemy to aim at his body instead. And under his school coat, he was wearing the bulletproof vest. As long as his vest stopped the bullet, then all he would have to do is wait for a chance to retrieve his gun and then, since his index finger was still working, he could pull the trigger and win. His gun was by his feet. With Toshinori glaring at him, Hiroki Sugimura paused for a moment, then pursed his lips tightly and calmly squeezed the trigger. Toshinori recalled his fight against Hirono Shimizu and considered how he should play dead. But it ended much more abruptly than he'd expected. Hiroki's gun only made a small metallic click. Hiroki looked confused. He nervously cocked the gun and pulled the trigger. Again, click. Toshinori's lips twisted into a smile hidden under the helmet. "Karate bastard, that was a dud. With that automatic, you'll have to pull the breech block and reload the chamber." Toshinori went for the gun by his feet. Hiroki immediately raised the stick in his right hand, but then, maybe thinking it was too risky to test the motorcycle helmet, turned around and ran toward the mountain beyond the house. Toshinori picked up the gun. His crippled hand ached, but he still managed to hold it. He fired. Because his hold on the grip wasn't tight, He couldn't fix his aim on Hiroki, but he could tell he hit him in the thigh, right near the butt. Did it only wing him? In any case, Hiroki suddenly tottered, but he didn't fall. He continued running. Toshinori also started running and fired another shot. This time he missed. The recoil of the gun, so pleasurable only moments ago, now sent a sharp pain through his injured hand, which infuriated Toshinori. He fired again. He missed again. Despite having been shot in the leg, Hiroki was still faster. Hiroki disappeared into the woods at the foot of the mountain. Damn it! Toshinori deliberated whether he should continue the chase, and decided not to. His opponent was injured, but so was he. The gun grip was slippery from the blood pouring from the stump of his former ring finger. Besides, if Toshinori entered the mountains now, Hiroki would reload his gun and shoot back. In that situation, it'd be too dangerous to expose himself like that with nothing to hide behind. He nervously crouched down. He had to get to the first house, the house he decided to enter. And he had to make sure Hiroki wouldn't see him enter it. Toshinori clutched his right hand, which was still holding the gun, and staggered over there, enduring the pain. As he traveled down the footpath, the pain became excruciating. He felt dizzy. First thing was his hand. He had to treat it. He had to come up with a different strategy. Oh, but damn. Even if he were able to play the violin after rehabilitation, this crippled hand would stick out during a performance, especially if they televised the concert and zoomed in. So now I'm going to be joining that lame group, the disabled. What a nice melody. How he's overcome his disability. How lame. He was approaching the house. Toshinori looked over his shoulder again. He looked closely, but didn't see any sign of Hiroki. He was safe now. Hiroki wasn't coming after him. Toshinori looked back at the house. He saw a guy standing on the farm field 6 to 7 meters away, right in front of the house he wanted. The guy had suddenly appeared out of nowhere. He had slicked back hair that reached a little too far behind his neck, and cold, gleaming eyes. By the time he realized it was Kazuo Kuriyama, male student number 6, another guy he couldn't stand. Category A, good-looking. A heavy burst of fire came out of his hands along with a rattling sound. The bullet slammed against Toshinori's torso. Toshinori was blown backward onto the ground. Because his grip on the gun had loosened from the pain, he dropped it and heard it knock against something. His back smacked hard against the dirt. His helmeted head hit the ground. The echoing gunfire faded into the night air. All was quiet once again. But of course, Toshinori Oda wasn't dead. He held his breath and lay down, frozen, trying his best to restrain his urge to snicker. Now that he was overwhelmed by this wicked pleasure, the agonizing pain from his right hand, his frustration over letting Hiroki Sugimura escape, and his anger at being suddenly attacked by a guy in Category A, his emotional faculties were a complete mess. But his body, with the exception of his right ring finger, was completely intact, just as it had been with Hirono Shimizu. So he was right to wear the helmet. Kazuo had aimed at Toshinori's torso, which was protected by the bulletproof vest. Just as Hiroki had done, Kazuo probably assumed Toshinori was dead. Toshinori's eyelids nearly shut, his field of vision resembled a widescreen movie. He could see at the far end of his field of vision the S&W glint faintly in the moonlight. In his waistband, near the small of his back, Toshinori could feel the stiff shape of the kitchen knife that he had found in the house where he'd killed Hirono Shimizu. It would take less than a second to unwrap the cloth around it. As he continued to sweat, which was the one thing he couldn't hold back, Toshinori thought, "All right, now pick up that gun lying over there. Then I'll slash that vulgar windpipe of yours. Or will you turn around and leave? Then I'll pick up the gun and dig a nice tunnel through that vulgar skull of yours. Come on, make your choice. Just hurry up and choose." But for some reason, instead of approaching the gun, Kazuo came straight at Toshinori. He was coming straight at him and staring at him with those cold eyes.
Why?
Toshinori wondered. I'm supposed to be dead. Look how good I am at playing dead. Kazuo didn't stop. He kept on approaching. One step, two, but I'm supposed to be dead. Why? The faint sound of his steps on the soil became louder, and his field of vision was now filled with the figure of Kazuo. Suddenly overcome with panic and fear, Toshinori frantically opened his eyes. Kazuo's engram once again let out a burst of fire into Toshinori's shielded head. Some of the point-blank shots turned into colorful sparks from bouncing against the reinforced plastic shell of the helmet, while others, after exiting Toshinori's skull, ricocheted inside his helmet, shattering Toshinori's skull along with the helmet. His body was dancing a strange boogie. Toshinori himself would have been irritated by this kind of vulgar dancing, and of course by the time it was all over, Toshinori's head was meat sauce in a broken bowl. Toshinori no longer played dead. He was dead. And so this boy who despised the ignorant, vulgar masses, foolish Toshinori Oda, had overestimated the value of his bulletproof vest and underestimated Kazuo Kiriyama's calm actions. As a result, he died easily. If he'd thought about how Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano had died yesterday morning, he would have realized that his assailant would have followed up on his enemy to deliver a coup de grace. But he wasn't so perceptive. Furthermore, though it was quite irrelevant now, he had no idea his killer, Kazuo Kiriyama, had, in his mansion that was much larger than Toshinori's home in Shioiwa-cho, mastered the violin at a level far superior to Toshinori's a long time ago, and then tossed his violin into the trash. 16 students remaining. Chapter 55. Some chatting. The sound of someone moving. She'd even settle for the faint sound of someone desperately trying to hold his or her breath. Instead, Mitsuko Sama, female student number 11, ended up hearing the sound of liquid running through grass. She could tell it was someone pissing in the grove nearby. Unless there was a dog on the island. Dawn was approaching. She glanced up and saw a faint blue beginning to emerge in the dark sky. After encountering Hiroki and somehow managing to escape him, Mitsuko first decided she needed a gun. She'd accidentally come across Megumi Ito, and, upon hearing Yoshimi Yahagi and Yoji Kurimoto in the middle of their fight, she'd killed them and managed to get her hands on a gun. If she'd had a gun in the first place, she would have gone back to the school and killed off everyone that came out one by one. Once she had a gun, she could confidently move around the island, so it was easy to kill Takako Chigusa, who just finished fighting Kazushi Niido. She should have finished her off, though. She'd have to be more careful next time. But now she was unarmed. She had used Megumi Ito's knife, and the only thing in her hand now was her original sickle from the beginning of the game. She had to get a gun because she wasn't the only one who chose to play the game. There was the machine gun shooter who killed Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano. She had just heard the gun go off again only 30 minutes ago. Of course, thanks to the shooter, she didn't have to kill off as many of her classmates. She could just let the assailant take care of that. She'd only kill when it came easy. In fact, after midnight, when she heard the machine gun's rapid gunfire along with the explosion afterwards, she decided it was best to avoid that area. A handgun against a machine gun? She'd be outmatched. So she decided to move somewhere she could view the area from a distance. And that was how she ended up finding and following Hiroki Sugimura. And that was supposed to be an easy kill. But it was highly likely she'd end up having to take on this machine gun shooter. Not having a gun would be a major disadvantage. Forget about pistol versus machine gun. It'd be hopeless with a sickle against a machine gun. Of course, she could have pursued Hiroki, but she thought it'd be too much trouble to get the gun back from him. His background in martial arts or whatever it was no joke. Her right hand still stung from his blow. And this time, if he saw her, he'd be merciless and shoot her. So Mitsuko had moved west along the longitudinal road and then entered the northern mountain, trying to find someone else. Approximately 3 hours passed. And now she finally heard someone making noise. Cautiously, Mitsuko made her way through the thicket toward the nearby grove. She mustn't be heard. The thicket opened into a small, mat-sized space at the edge of the grove. The grove loomed ahead on her left and right, and at the edge of the clearing, a boy in a school coat had his back toward her. He nervously looked to his right and left as the trickling sound against the leaves continued. He was probably scared he might be attacked by someone. She could tell it was Tadakatsu Hatagami, male student number 18. He was on the baseball team. Nothing exceptional, just an average guy. He was tall and well-built, and his face was average. His hobbies were... Actually, she had no idea, and besides, there was no point asking now. The crucial thing was that, as Tadakatsu was attending to his business, Mitsuko realized he held something tightly in his right hand. It was a gun. It was a fairly large model, a revolver. She once again broke into that fallen angel's grin. Tadakatsu still wasn't done. He must have been holding it for quite a while. He continued to look left and right while he emptied his bladder. Mitsuko quietly but quickly took out her sickle with her right hand. Tadakatsu would have to use both of his hands to zip up his pants. Even if he tried using one hand, he'd be vulnerable. "It looks like this'll be the end of you. Didn't someone in a detective show get killed this way?" The trickling became sporadic. It stopped, and then another drip, and then it stopped completely. Tadakatsu once again looked around and then quickly moved his hands to the front. By then, Mitsuko had already snuck up behind him. The back of his head, with short spiked hair, was right in front of her. She raised the sickle. She heard someone from behind say, "Whoa!" And Tadakatsu suddenly turned around, along with Mitsuko. She, of course, put the sickle down and looked back at the speaker behind her. It was Yuichiro Takeguchi, male student number 13. He was shorter than Tadakatsu and had a cute, boyish face. He held what appeared to be his weapon, an aluminum bat, in his right hand and stared at Mitsuko, his mouth agape. Tadakatsu saw Mitsuko and also said, "Whoa," and then muttered, "Damn," and pointed the gun at her. Seeing how Yuichiro's appearance didn't surprise him, Mitsuko realized they were together. Mitsuko cursed herself. Tadakatsu had left Yuichiro just to take a piss. How stupid could I have been not to check? "Come on, you're both boys. Can't you just pee next to each other?" This wasn't the time or place to lecture them. Tadakatsu's revolver, which, although it hardly mattered, was a Smith & Wesson M19 357 Magnum, was pointed directly at Mitsuko's chest. "Tadakatsu, stop it," Yuichiro said, his voice trembling, probably from her sudden appearance and his fear of seeing someone killed right in front of his eyes. Tadakatsu looked like he was ready to pull the trigger at any moment, but his finger on the trigger stopped a fraction of a millimeter before the hammer fell. His gun still pointed at Mitsuko. Tadakatsu looked over at Yuichiro. "Why? She just tried to kill me. Look, a sickle. She's holding a sickle." "No," Mitsuko croaked as if her words were stuck in her throat. She made sure her voice was high-pitched and trembling, and of course, she didn't forget to flinch her body back. Once again, the star actress had a chance to show off her talents. "Watch me now."
I...
She thought of dropping the sickle, but decided not to, since it would look more natural holding it.
"I was just trying to call you. Then I realized you were peeing, so I..."
Mitsuko looked down and made her face blush.
"So..."
Tadakatsu didn't lower the gun.
"You're lying. You were trying to kill me."
His gun hand was trembling. He'd restrained himself from shooting her because he'd never shot someone before. The moment he saw her, he probably would have fired reflexively, but now that Yuichiro had intervened, he had time to think and hesitate, and that meant he would lose.
Stop it, Tadakatsu, Yuichiro pleaded with him. Didn't I already say how we have to join up with others?
You gotta be kidding.
Tadakatsu shook his head. There's no way I can be with this bitch. Don't you know who we're dealing with? He said. She might have been the one who killed Yumiko and Yukiko. No, I would never.
Mitsuko made her eyes brim with tears.
Yuichiro said frantically, Mitsuko isn't carrying a machine gun. She doesn't even have a gun. We can't know for sure. She might have tossed it once she ran out of bullets.
Yuichiro fell silent for a moment, but then said, Tadakatsu, you shouldn't raise your voice. His voice sounded different from before. It was calm and kind. Tadakatsu opened his mouth slightly as if he'd been caught off guard. Mitsuko was also a bit surprised. Yuichiro Takeguchi was into anime. He was the otaku of their class, but now he sounded quite dignified. Yuichiro shook his head. You shouldn't be so indiscriminately suspicious, he continued as if admonishing Tadakatsu. Think about it. Mitsuko might have sought you out because she really trusts you.
But then, Tadakatsu knit his brows. His gun was still pointed at Mitsuko, but the tension of his finger on the trigger seemed to wane. Then what do you suggest we do?
If you insist she can't be trusted, then we can take turns keeping an eye on her. I mean, even if we were to tell her to leave, she still might attack you later when she has the chance.
Well, I'll say I'm impressed. He's sharp and articulate. I mean, putting aside whether or not he's making a good call, which in fact would be to shoot me now.
Tadakatsu licked his lips a little.
Come on, we need more people on our side, and then we have to figure out a way to get out of here. Once we spend some time with her, we'll see whether we can trust her, right? Yuichiro insisted, and finally Tadakatsu nodded, still eyeing her suspiciously. He said in a tired voice, Well, all right. Making herself look relieved, Mitsuko let her body unwind. She rubbed her left hand against her eyes to clear them of their contrived tears. Yuichiro let out a sigh of relief.
Get rid of that sickle, Tadakatsu said, and Mitsuko immediately tossed it to the ground. Then she nervously alternated glances at Tadakatsu and Yuichiro.
Tadakatsu said, Search her, Yuichiro.
Mitsuko looked back at Tadakatsu, her eyes opened wide as if she didn't understand. Then she looked at Yuichiro, who stood still in astonishment.
Tadakatsu repeated himself.
He aimed the gun at her.
Hurry up. Don't be so bashful. This is a matter of life and death. You know that.
Okay, all right. Yuichiro put his bat down and reluctantly came forward. He stood right beside Mitsuko.
Hurry, Tadakatsu insisted.
Uh-huh.
His dignified manner was gone now. He'd gone back to being his usual weak otaku self.
But,
hurry!
Yuichiro said, Mitsuko, I'm really sorry. I really don't want to do this, but I have to. And he ran his hands lightly over her body. Even in the dim light at dawn, she could tell his face had turned bright red.
How cute.
Of course, she didn't forget to act all embarrassed, too.
After he was done searching, he lifted his hands.
Tadakatsu said, Look under her skirt, too.
Tadakatsu, Yuichiro protested, but Tadakatsu shook his head. I'm not trying to get my rocks off, I just don't want to die.
So Yuichiro blushed even more and said, I was wondering, could you lift your skirt up a little?
Oh my, let's not have a heart attack here, little boy.
But Mitsuko only answered in a meek voice,
Oh, okay,
and bashfully lifted her skirt up to where her underwear was nearly visible.
Geez, this was turning into one of those adult videos titled Fetish Special, starring real junior high school girls.
I've actually been in them.
After making sure Mitsuko had nothing to hide, Yuichiro said, I'm done.
Tadakatsu nodded and said,
All right. Yuichiro, I want you to tie up her hands with your belt.
Yuichiro gave Tadakatsu another reluctant look, but Tadakatsu refused to give in, aiming his gun at her.
Those are my conditions, If you can't accept them, I'll shoot her now. Yuichiro looked at Matsuko, then at Tadakatsu, and licked his lips. Then Matsuko said to Yuichiro, Yuichiro, go ahead, it's all right. Yuichiro looked at Matsuko, but then nodded, pulled out his belt, and held Matsuko's hands. I'm sorry, Matsuko, he said. Tadakatsu still pointed his gun at her and said, You don't have to be so polite with her. But Yuichiro seemed to ignore his warning as he gently wrapped the belt around her wrists without saying another word. As she innocently offered her hands, Matsuko was thinking how lucky, in spite of the situation, she was to have been discovered right before lifting her sickle. She had also wiped the blood off the sickle earlier. Now that was luck. Now then, what's my next move? 16 students remaining. Chapter 56. So that's why I thought we had to seek other classmates, Yuichiro said, and stopped, glancing at Matsuko. Dawn had already broken, and she could see how his face was grimy with dirt. They were sitting next to each other in the shrubs. Of course, Mitsuko's hands were tied up with the belt, and her sickle was tucked in the back of Yuichiro's pants. Tadakatsu Hatagami was in a deep sleep. He still held on to his gun. He had, in fact, tied it to his hand with a handkerchief. After she ended up with this duo, Tadakatsu was the one who insisted on taking turns sleeping. I agree we have to find others, but let's get some sleep. We've been up all this time. We'll lose our ability to make judgments. Once Yuichiro had agreed, Tadakatsu said, First it's going to be Yuichiro or me. Then Matsuko can sleep after us. And Yuichiro responded, I can sleep later. So the order was decided. Holding his gun, it should have been handed over to Yuichiro who was keeping watch, but Tadakatsu didn't even mention it, nor did Yuichiro protest. Tadakatsu lay down and fell asleep within a matter of seconds. Mitsuko had an idea how they hooked up. Tadakatsu hadn't slept at all until he met Yuichiro, and he probably couldn't sleep after joining him. Why? Because he was probably afraid Yuichiro might attack him by surprise. And even though Mitsuko might be much more threatening than Yuichiro, now that she was with them, even if Tadakatsu slept, Mitsuko and Yuichiro would have to keep an eye on each other so long as he held on to his gun and remained cautious. He could finally get some sleep. Of course, Mitsuko hadn't slept at all either, but it was nothing to her. She was much tougher than your average wimpy junior high school kid. Yuichiro and Mitsuko remained silent for a while, but then Yuichiro told her how he'd ended up joining Tadakatsu. It turned out that Yuichiro also didn't move at all during the day, but then, assuming he was safer at night, he cautiously began to move. Of course, Matsuko thought, it could go either way. You could escape detection at night, but that also meant it was hard to detect your opponent, too. But of course, if you were in a tight spot and had to run away, night was better. Yuichiro had encountered Tadakatsu only 2 hours before Matsuko had stumbled upon the pair. The two tried to concoct an escape plan, but came up with nothing, and so Tadakatsu stepped out to pee. But because it was taking so long, Yuichiro got worried and checked on him. And that was how he found Mitsuko. I was so scared at first. I thought I couldn't trust anybody. But then I realized most of us probably just want to escape. Yuichiro stopped and glanced at Mitsuko. The otaku of Class B, Yuichiro Takaguchi, avoided direct eye contact in his conversations. He always looked down. Still, from the way he talked to her, Yuichiro didn't seem to be all that cautious toward her, for some reason. And so Mitsuko pretended to look somewhat relieved and asked him, So Tadakatsu had that gun. Yuichiro nodded. Yeah. Weren't you scared of Tadakatsu? Okay, now act even more relaxed and a little more intimate. No, I mean even now. He won't let go of it. Yuichiro grinned. Well, first of all, Tadakatsu didn't shoot at me or anything. He did point his gun at me. We were classmates in elementary school, so I know him pretty well. But Mitsuko made her face look slightly pale. You saw how Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano died. Some of us are